Tonight, as I mentioned, we look at Ezra's prayer, a prayer of petition. Ezra praying for a group of people who perhaps have gotten to the point to where they cannot pray for themselves. Ezra is not involved in their sin, but goes to God on their behalf. We've looked this year at the examples of Jesus' prayer and him teaching his disciples how to pray. We looked at David's prayer of confession. We looked at Solomon's request to God, and God told him no. We noticed Solomon's request for wisdom, and last month we looked at Nehemiah praying for success. And Ezra's prayer this month shows us that Solomon gained that and gained the success that he had prayed for. But there were some problems after that, and we'll look at those tonight. I would encourage you, next month, fourth Sunday, as we continue this series, we're going to look at a sinner's prayer. A very familiar, well-known sinner who we are introduced to and even given his name. And we're going to look at the prayers that he offers to God and see how God responds to that. But again, this prayer is a petition, a prayer on the behalf of others. I'd like to begin with some background information. As we've studied in our Old Testament history, and hopefully you are aware of Israel's situations. We're studying now on Wednesday night in Isaiah, and God is warning the children of Judah through Isaiah that they will be taken captive if they don't change. Israel has already been taken into captivity. The book of Ezra talks about the fact that the children of Israel have been able to return to Jerusalem. When we look at Ezra and begin with the reading in chapter 9, they've already come back. And understand, this has been a minimum of probably 80 years or 90 years for the ones who were last taken and first to come back. 150 years, perhaps, since some of those were taken into captivity. And so these are new generations. When the temple was rebuilt, there was joy at the fact that the temple was rebuilt, and there was also sadness because it was not anywhere near the magnificence it was before. You had a generation that was taken into captivity and knew what the original temple looked like. And then you have a new generation that has never seen it. You have generations that have come back now that did not grow up in Jerusalem, that were born in a foreign country, and now they've come back. And so you have a whole different generation. You read through the first part of Ezra and in Nehemiah, you realize there were many, many delays and distractions in building the walls and the temple, but they've been built. The Jerusalem is a city. The temple is there. The temple worship has been reinstated, and the nation begins settling back into its routine of having been gone into captivity for so long, and now they're back. And so now they begin this building process. And Ezra will return as a teacher of the law to make sure that the law was being kept as God has instructed. And he goes with the blessing and authority of God and the king of Persia. The king would send Ezra back with his blessing and his permission, with provisions from him, and telling Ezra that you need to make sure that the people are following not only the laws of the land, but following the laws of your God. Make sure they understand they need to do that. The king of Persia had been under the influence of God's people for a number of years and understood who God was. And so Ezra comes back, and there's a problem. The cause of their initial captivity was idolatry that was brought on by outside influences. I'd like to look at a few passages just to back up and pick up what they were taught. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, as Moses is giving his farewell speech to the children of Israel and recounting all the things that God had taught them, in verses 3 and 4 of Deuteronomy 7, Moses says, "Furthermore, you shall not intermarry with the nations who live in the land which you are to take. You shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons. They will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. And then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will destroy you quickly." Joshua would give the same exhortation in Joshua chapter 23. They have conquered the land, and so the land is now theirs. But Joshua reinforces what Moses would have to say years earlier in Joshua chapter 23 and verse 12 and 13. And he has just told them that you need to make a choice here, who you're going to serve. And he tells them, he says, if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you, and intermarry with them so that you associate with them and they with you, know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out from before you, but they will be a snare and a trap to you and a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you. A couple examples are found in the book of 1 Kings, in 1 Kings chapter 3. In verse 1, of all of the wisdom that Solomon was given, he failed to use that in his marriages. Verse 1 of chapter 3 of 1 Kings says, "Then Solomon formed an alliance with the Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her to the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall around Jerusalem." Solomon begins by bringing in a woman from another nation to marry, and that will be the beginning of many of those relationships which will be his downfall. In chapter 16, in 1 Kings chapter 16, and in verse 31, speaking of Ahab, and it said that it came about as though it had been a trivial thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he married Jezebel, daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went to serve Baal and worship him. Two of the most notable kings, and the destruction that came because of who they married and what it had caused. And you may think about, well, was every marriage to a foreign person bad or wrong? Did God condemn all of those? And I'd especially like to bring to your remembrance one account. If you remember Boaz's mother was Rahab. She was a Canaanite from the city of Jericho. Boaz's wife was Ruth, who was from the land of Moab. She was a foreigner. And they both were from nations that worshiped idols and gods foreign to Jehovah, but God approved those marriages. Why was that? And it was because Rahab and Ruth both forsook the gods of their homes and embraced Jehovah. God warned the people about the marriages to foreign individuals because of the influence they would have. But it wasn't because they were foreign, but because of their influence. If these individuals turned to Jehovah, that marriage was holy to God. But that person had to have changed and been one of God's children and come to God and know him as he was. Marriages with idolatrous individuals in Solomon and Ahab's day brought about the same situation that it did here. And it was causing a problem. And Ezra comes and understands and sees that problem. I'd like to read to you now the prayer in Ezra chapter 9, beginning in verse 5. Down through verse 15 through the end of the chapter. And remember, Ezra is not involved in this. He comes to the nation and it's happening. And it's not just among some of the common people. Those who are leaders in the temple, those who are leaders of the nation have become involved in marriages to women, or some of the women involved in marriages to men who are not godly people and who will draw them away. And Ezra hears about this. Beginning in verse 5, it says, "But at the evening offering, I arose from my humiliation, even with my garment and my robe torn, and I fell on my knees and stretched out my hands to the Lord my God. And I said, 'Oh my God, I am ashamed and embarrassed to lift up my face to you, my God. For our iniquities have risen above our heads, and our guilt has grown even to the heavens. Since the days of our fathers to this day, we have been in great guilt. And on account of our iniquities, we, our kings and our priests, have been given into the hand of the kings of the lands, to the sword, to captivity, and to plunder, and to open shame, as it is to this day. But now, for a brief moment, grace has been shown from the Lord our God to leave us an escaped remnant, and to give us a peg in his holy place, that our God may enlighten our eyes and grant us a little reviving in our bondage. For we are slaves, yet in our bondage our God has not forsaken us, but has extended loving kindness to us in the sight of the kings of Persia to give us revival, to raise up the house of our God, to restore its ruins, and to give us a wall in Judah and Jerusalem. Now, our God, what shall we say after this? For we have forsaken your commandments, which you have commanded by your servants of prophets, saying, 'The land which you are entering to possess is an unclean land, with the uncleanness of the peoples of the land, and their abominations which have filled it from the end to end with their impurity. Do not give your daughters to their sons, nor take their daughters to your sons, and never seek their peace or their prosperity, that you may be strong and eat the good things of the land, and leave it as an inheritance to your sons forever. After all that has come upon us for our evil deeds and our great guilt, since you, our God, have required us less than our iniquities deserve, and have given us an escaped remnant as this, shall we again break your commandments and intermarry with the peoples who commit these abominations? Would you not be angry with us to the point of destruction until there is no remnant, nor any who escape? O Lord God of Israel, you are righteous, for we have been left an escaped remnant, as it is to this day. Behold, we are before you in our guilt, and no one can stand before you because of this.'" Ezra acknowledges that they went into captivity because of their sin, and God was gracious enough to let them come back, and they've fallen into it again. And Ezra prays that God will not destroy them again and remove any sign of a remnant and wipe them out. The only solution is to put away wives and children and husbands of these unholy marriages. How many people do you know that are married to someone they have no right to being married to? And the only way to fix that is to dissolve that marriage. And you think, how hard would that be? It was hard here. They had to do that. They had not only married some, but perhaps had even had children. And the only way to reconcile that sin was to end that marriage. And it wasn't a quick process. If you look in chapter 10 and verses 16 and 17, after Ezra explains to them what they're going to do, it says, "The exiles did so. And Ezra the priest selected men who were heads of the father's households for each of their father's households, all of them by name. So they convened on the first day of the 10th month to investigate the matter." The first day of the 10th month. So in our calendar, think that they met in October 1st. "And they finished investigating all the men who had married foreign wives by the first day of the first month." So October, November, December, it took them 3 months to go through all the accounting and see how many marriages needed to be dissolved. And they did that. And it speaks and talks about the fact that, that these individuals had a responsibility to put them away and to get back to where they needed to be with God. This was a hard thing to do. And that's hard for, imagine Ezra coming into this situation, coming down here, coming back to Jerusalem, the new city, it's been built, the temple is established, and to come down and, be a part of that, and to find out that they're headed right back in the same direction. And they're going to lose all of this if they don't fix it. It was a hard change. And yet they were able to do that. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 11, says that the accounts found that we read tonight in Deuteronomy and Joshua and Kings and here in Ezra were written for our instruction that we might learn. And so we don't just present this information and say, here's what happened back then. What we need to do is look at the application and say, okay, now, where does that put me? What do I need to do with that? What do I need to do with that information? By God's grace and His mercy, we've been redeemed from a life of slavery. Slavery to sin. This morning, many of you mentioned that you appreciated the lesson that I gave this morning. Well, understand that Jesus died because we were in sin. And He died so that we might have that sin removed. And that is certainly a gracious, wonderful act of God. And Wayne mentioned in his prayer of adoration to God what he had done. And Jack in his thanksgiving for the fact that God made that available. A variety of reasons and sins puts us right back where we were. We can't go back there. Why would we do that? Why would we go back and throw away everything that we've worked for so far and count as nothing what Jesus did for us? This is not a new problem. It happened in Ezra's day. Peter writes about it in 2 Peter 2 and verse 20. He begins and says, "For if after they escape the defilements of the world by the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and are again entangled in them, they are overcome. The last state has become worse than the first. It would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than to have known it and turn away from the holy commanded handed to them." You think, well, how could it be worse now? And I think about the multitudes of disciples of Christ who have lost their faith and walked away and will face God in judgment knowing that they had the promise and threw it away. We need to be very cautious that we don't become like the children of Israel and fall back into things that separated us from God to begin with. And maybe they're different things. Maybe early on, you know, a lifestyle separated us from God and we've changed that. We've turned that around. But now I'm involved in something else that separates me from God. Isaiah says it's our sin that does the separation. And Ezra here tells these people that God destroyed you at one point. And by His mercy, He's allowed you to come back here. Don't go back where you were. And that's the application for us. Jesus died for our sins. He's given us a promise. He says, I'm going to build a house, prepare the house for you. You prepare yourself for that house, for that mansion. We need to be cautious not to throw that away. The Hebrew writer talks about having gone through so much and then to let it go. For something here on this earth that's just temporary. So I would encourage you to think about those things. If there's things in your lives that is starting to pull you away, if you're married to something that's unholy, you need to separate yourself from that and say, I can't be involved in that. It could be a job. It could be a husband or wife. That you have no right to be married to, especially in our world today, that people that we deal with. It could be a hobby, a pastime, something we enjoy doing that maybe in itself is not necessarily evil, but it's pulling us away from God. And if that's so, we need to be cautious with that and be careful not to be drawn back. Randy's going to lead us in the singing of number 284, What Will Your Answer Be? When Moses directed his words to the children of Israel, as did Joshua, he said, here's the choices you have. You'll make the choice. What will your answer be? Will you do what God has asked you to do? Or will you ignore that and you just go off on your own? And God, sadly, one of the greatest things that God has given us, which is often to our detriment, is a choice. And he says, you can choose. And so tonight I ask you, what will your answer be? Will you stay strong and follow the things you need to do? Or will you walk back into the mire of the world and muddy yourself up again? Let's work to help each other. If we see someone else walking someplace where they shouldn't, and that's what Ezra did. Ezra came back and he saw him in a place, you can't be there. And so he prays for them and warns them. If we see one of our own that's straying off someplace that's dangerous, we need to warn them and we need to tell them, encourage them to do the things that they need to do. If you've never taken advantage of Jesus' sacrifice and given yourself to him and confessed your faith in him and repented and been baptized, we'll give you that opportunity to do that right now also. Would you do that while we come and stand and sing?